Russian intervention, on the other hand, was undesirable. The Bolsheviks were inherently untrustworthy, committed to a policy even after of socialism in one country, but beyond it there was the Comintern, there was the sense of world revolution. So Russian intervention was not desirable. For Chamberlain, war was to be avoided almost at any cost. War was the real enemy. Britain, Europe needed stability, and war would only, if it started small, it might erupt into a much larger conflict as it had in July, August 1914. Hitler, he believed, in his greatest miscalculation, could be dealt with honorably, meeting his just desires for revision of the treaty. Chamberlain's greatest, I think, miscalculation, his greatest mistake in this period were not the other assumptions about the international system. It was his assessment of Hitler personally and Hitler's own political makeup. Chamberlain, it seems, really believed that he was dealing with a traditional German statesman, a kind of Bismarck or a representative of the old Kaiser. He failed to see the radical ideological core of National Socialism. He failed to see in Hitler a man who was driven by a larger ideological vision in foreign policy. And as a consequence, Chamberlain kept thinking, well, one could make a deal, one could strike a bargain, one could make a traditional European geopolitical deal with this National Socialist regime. And this, of course, proved to be a miscalculation of very grave proportions. And so we arrive at the Führerbau, the Führer building, on the Königsplatz in Munich on September 30th, 1938. There, Daladier of France, Mussolini, who himself was one of the major initiators of the conference, Mussolini, despite having rattled the saber throughout the 1930s, was really unprepared for war in 1938, and he didn't want to see fascist Italy drawn into a war with France, with England, as a result of the Sudetenland, a place that most Italians would hardly have been able to find on a map. Hitler, of course, representing Germany, and Neville Chamberlain representing Great Britain. Notable by their absence at this Munich meeting were representatives of Czechoslovakia and of the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union had a treaty with both France and Czechoslovakia, pledging the Soviet Union to come to the Czechs' aid should the Czechs be threatened by Germany. And yet the Soviets were not invited to the Munich conference. Chamberlain believed that he had learned the lessons of the Great War. If the British, the French, the Germans, the Russians had simply walked the last mile, if they had left no stone unturned to find a way to peace in 1914, then Europe would not have tripped, stumbled, fumbled its way into this great catastrophe that consumed millions of lives between 1914 and 1918. If Sir Edward Grey had only gone to Berlin, if he had sat down with Bethmann Hollweg, if he had sat down with the Kaiser, if he had emphasized exactly what Britain's position was, the willingness to compromise, the points at which Britain would stand firm, if all of the diplomats of that era had done this, then perhaps this great tragedy of Western civilization could have been avoided. This was one of the major motivating forces behind Chamberlain's actions throughout the late 1930s, through the Munich Conference, and indeed even beyond. Millions of lives would have been saved, Chamberlain believed, if only the diplomats had in some way swallowed their pride, been willing to go and to negotiate directly. An agreement was then reached at this meeting on September 30th, 1938, which in effect ceded the Sudetenland directly to Germany. It was a triumph, once again, Hitler argued, of the principle of national self-determination of peoples. Europe heaved a collective sigh of relief. It is important to remember that when Neville Chamberlain returned to Britain, he returned home a hero, and not simply in Britain, but all around Europe. He was seen as the man who saved the peace who prevented another catastrophe. Those who spoke out against the Munich Agreement, those who challenged Chamberlain, such as Winston Churchill, back in Great Britain, were seen as warmongers, were seen as people who were ready to push Europe into a new war. Chamberlain, of course, arrived back in Britain and with a copy not of the actual Munich Agreement dealing with the Sudetenland, but of an annex to that agreement, a German British agreement to resolve differences in the future by peaceful means. Chamberlain, of course, standing at the side of the airplane that returned him from the Munich conference, would raise that agreement and say that I believe this means peace in our time.